Good afternoon, and thank you all for standing by. I'd just like to inform all parties your lines have been placed on a listen-only mode until the question-answer segment of today's conference. If you'd like to ask a question, that'll be star one. Today's call is also being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Jenny Lyons. Ma'am, you may begin.
Thank you, Terry. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jenny Lyons, and I'm with Public Affairs here at NOAA Fisheries. Today, NOAA Fisheries is announcing a major step forward in combating illegal fishing and seafood fraud. This issue of illegal, unreported, and unregulated fishing, what we often call IUU fishing, as well as seafood fraud, really undermines our domestic and international conservation and management efforts. These things hurt the fishers who play by the rules, and that's why the President set up a task force to address this topic. It's also why today's announcement is so important. So with that, I have the pleasure today of introducing to you right now John Hendersheet. John is the director of NOAA Fisheries Office of International Affairs and Seafood Inspection. And John is going to give you a brief summary of our news, and then we're going to open for questions. We also have Chris Rogers with us today, and he may chime in to answer questions as well. Chris is NOAA Fisheries Assistant Director of International Affairs and Seafood Inspection. And if you got our media advisory, you have the correct spelling of their names and titles. If not, you can find that media advisory on NOAA.gov or give me a ring right after this call and I'll get that to you. And my phone number is 301-427-8013. Just a reminder, though, this call is just for working media. So if you're not a member of the press, you are welcome to listen, but please do not ask questions. This time really is reserved for reporters. So Terry, can you please explain the process again for asking a question?
Yes, ma'am. If you would like to ask a question, that will be star, then one. Star one to ask a question. You'll be asked to state your name prior to joining the queue. Please make sure your mute feature is off and you state your name clearly. To withdraw your question, that will be star two.
Thank you, Terry. Now let's hear from John. John, please go ahead.
Thank you, Jenny, and thanks to all of you for joining. What I'm going to do is to provide some context for the proposed rule that we're rolling out today and that I'll be describing in a little bit more detail. I'm going to provide just a few comments about the task force work and the action plan that brought us to this point. So in June of 2014, following the Our Ocean Conference, the President signed a memorandum establishing a task force to combat IUU fishing and seafood fraud. That task force included 10 federal agencies and 5 offices of the President. And after extensive engagement with stakeholders and foreign governments, the task force submitted to the White House recommendations in December of 2014. And then in March of 2015, the task force released an action plan for implementation of its recommendations. So these 15 recommendations that the task force developed are targeted to address needs across local, state, federal, and international sectors, to enhance existing authorities, to strengthen interagency and intergovernmental coordination, for information sharing and to fortify partnerships, and to improve seafood traceability. Those 15 recommendations really fall into 4 different categories: international engagement, enhancement of enforcement and enforcement tools, creating and expanding partnerships with non-federal entities to identify and eliminate seafood fraud and IUU seafood products in U.S. commerce, and finally, traceability, to create a risk-based traceability program to track seafood from harvest or production in the case of aquaculture to entry into U.S. commerce and to prevent entry of illegal product into the U.S. supply chain. So as I mentioned, the traceability program has been developed with a risk-based approach to track seafood from the point of harvest to entry into the U.S. commerce that includes the following elements. First, the development of principles for identifying species at risk in support of a risk-based approach. In November, National Ocean Committee that has a National Ocean Council Committee that now oversees the work of the action plan published a final list of at-risk species, and I'll go over that list in a few minutes. We also sought comment on minimum standards and necessary data requirements, including the use of the International Trade Data System, which is a federal import and export trade data portal. Looking at the use of species names and codes in implementing and enforcing the traceability program, developing the traceability rule itself, and that's really what we're going to be focusing on today, sharing of information about traceability, the development of a trusted trader program, and finally, the evaluation and the expansion of this risk-based program to ultimately include all species and seafood. So the principles for determining the priority species or those species that are at particular risk of IUU fishing and seafood fraud include enforcement capability, catch documentation schemes, the existence of catch documentation schemes, the complexity of the chain of custody and processing supply chains, the extent to which there's a record of species misrepresentation, mislabeling, or other types of misrepresentations, a history of fishing violations associated with that species, and finally, instances where acts of fraud can result in human health risks. So an interagency group of experts was convened to develop these principles in response to extensive public comment, which we received this summer, and then applied these principles to a broad universe, actually, a broad range of species that are harvested and or imported into the U.S. And after a careful evaluation of all of those species against the principles that I described, the following species were identified as being at particular risk of IUU fishing and seafood fraud. They include abalone, Atlantic cod, blue crab, dolphin fish or mahi-mahi, grouper, red king crab, Pacific cod, red snapper, sea cucumber, sharks, all species of sharks, all species of shrimp, swordfish, and four species of tuna. That would be albacore, big eye, skipjack, and yellowfin tunas. So the significance of that list is that those are the species to which the rulemaking that we're going to be talking about today applies. It's important to understand that the traceability program applies to both domestic fisheries here in the U.S. as well as seafood imported into the United States. Since, as I mentioned before, the scope of this traceability is from harvest to point of entry into U.S. commerce, with respect to domestic seafood products, we interpreted that scope to mean the point at which fish is harvested in the U.S. and where it's first landed for sale by the harvester. With respect to imports, we're obviously looking at a more complex chain of custody, again, including harvest, first landing, but then all other transactions and movements of that product to the point where it is entered into the U.S. For import. So that would include things like transshipments, processing and reprocessing, storage, and commingling of product. The process now for finally publishing a final rule for this traceability program includes 60 days for public comment, in addition to the normal written public comment that the agency is soliciting. We'll have two webinars, which offers the opportunity for a more interactive process of comment, as well as a hearing at the Boston Seafood Show in early March. The comment period will close in early April, and we're targeting publication of a final rule late summer, early fall, in the September timeframe. So lastly, what I'd like to then do is talk a little bit about what happens after that final rule is published. In December of 2016, the National Ocean Council Committee, again, that is responsible for this action plan, has been charged with publishing a report that evaluates the expansion of the traceability program, what it would take to update the list of at-risk species, when appropriate to identify additional authorities that might be required to improve implementation, and recommendations for creating a process to provide traceability information to the consumer. So lastly, I'm going to talk just a little bit about what information we're talking about in order to establish this import data rule. And again, while I described a traceability program that applies to both domestic and import seafood, this rule applies specifically to imports. We did a comprehensive analysis of data availability for domestic fisheries and are satisfied that we at present have access to all the necessary data and all the comparable data to that that we'll be collecting relative to imports through existing state and federal data reporting and collection authorities. So what does this traceability program look like with respect to the data? Well, in terms of harvest, we will have data, we have data elements, all of which are listed in the proposed rule that deal with who harvested the fish, what species was harvested, where did that harvest occur and when, and with what gear. Then in terms of the landing of that fish, of making that transition from the fishing vessel into the supply chain, with first landing, a question of to whom was that fish landed. Again, what exactly was landed? Was the product modified at all prior to landing? Where did that landing occur and when? Those two sets of data really constitute the chain of custody to which the program applies domestically. Additionally, then, with respect to imports, we're looking for information that would then follow the chain of custody from that first landing to the point of entry into U.S. commerce. The data associated with the harvest and the first landing, the who, what, where, when, and how that I listed off just a few moments ago, will be reported through the International Trade Data System. There are, and I... happy to answer questions about that system, but suffice it to say at this point that there will simply be a data entry protocol that accommodates the provision of those data. So that is a reporting requirement. The chain of custody information beyond that first landing will be achieved through either model forms that NOAA has developed or through the use of generally accepted business documents that are already used, things like bills of lading, air bills, processing receipts, etc. For that information, we are requiring that the importer of record, the entity that has the permit to enter this product into the U.S. and who is responsible to provide this information, is also responsible then to retain records that, upon request by NOAA, would be provided for audit and verification. In instances where data is absent, or in instances where there are other issues with the quality or the completeness of the data, we would then move to an investigation stage. Lastly, the preamble to the proposed rule anticipates that as this international trade data system develops and once we've been able to identify what the key chain of custody data elements are, we anticipate establishing additional reporting requirements associated with the chain of custody. But I'll reiterate that for now, those are a record-keeping requirement. So I'll leave it with that. I'm happy to answer questions either about the process leading up to the list of species, the principles that were used to identify those, how that fed into the development of this proposed rule, or next steps as we implement this seafood traceability program.
Thank you, John. At this time, we are going to open for reporter questions. Terry, can you please remind everyone how to ask a question, please?
Yes, ma'am. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, that is going to be star followed by one. Once again, star one to ask a question. Please make sure your mute feature is unmuted and you state your name clearly. Once again, star one to ask a question.
All right, let's get started with questions. Our first question comes from Politico. Catherine, it looks like we're queuing you up to speak. Go ahead.
Hi, yeah, this is Catherine. Thanks for taking my call. I was hoping that you could address just some of the comments I've been hearing from some other ocean groups, like tracking the seafood from, you know, where it enters the United States to the actual point of sale. Is that something that you guys plan to do in the future? Because it doesn't sound like it's in this proposal at the moment. Thank you.
Thank you for your question. You are correct in stating that this proposed rule, as I mentioned, traces the seafood product to the point of entry into U.S. commerce. Tracking seafood beyond that point is certainly something that would enhance our ability to identify fraud and other issues within that part of the supply chain. Given the fact that many of the laws that would govern that activity, that level of effort would require a lot of partnership, not only among federal agencies, but also among state and local entities. Many of the laws, for instance, that would be applied at the retail level, the restaurant level, et cetera, are not things that the federal government where the federal government has jurisdiction. So, you know, to the extent that that is considered at some point in the future, that would very much be not only a cross-agency, but cross-jurisdictional discussion.
Great.
That, just to clarify, however, the action plan that lays out the parameters for this traceability program is very clear about the scope of harvest to point of entry into U.S. commerce.
Thank you, John. Our next question for you comes from CNBC. Deborah, we are queuing up your line right now, and you are live, so go ahead and ask your question. Deborah, are you still with us?
Hi, can you hear me?
We hear you. Go ahead.
Great. Thank you for taking my question. I'm just wondering if the traceability program is going to extend to all U.S. territories. For instance, would landings in places like American Samoa also be subject to this new action plan?
So to the extent that it is landed domestically, I explained that the traceability scope would include the harvest and landing data, and we have verified that we do have access to that. Beyond that, fishing activity outside of the U.S. would fall within the scope of this program when the product was landed for import or entered into U.S. commerce. So it would not cover, obviously, fishing activity that did not generate products that were ultimately exported to the U.S.
Thank you, John. Our next question comes from Jean-Louis at
Jean-Louis Santini with AFP, Agency France Presse. Yes, thank you for taking the questions. Can you talk about the cooperation that you have with other countries, mainly the European Union, and if those countries and the Europeans have already this kind of program of traceability?
So I will, in response to your question, focus on the EU because I think that they have probably the most well-known program that addresses the supply chain, addresses ensuring that imports, in this case into the EU, are the result of legal harvest of fish. There are differences between the approach that the EU has chosen and the approach that the U.S. has taken in the development of this rule. As you may know, the EU requires a catch documentation, and that is a attestation provided by the flag state of the vessel that harvests the fish to the EU, accompanying the export or the shipment of that product. The program in the U.S., as I described it, is a business-to-government program. In other words, we are not looking to other nations to provide direct attestation to the U.S., but instead looking to industry to provide very similar information. So while the approaches are different, the objectives are very much the same. I just returned from, or just came to Brussels from the Seafood Summit in Malta, and that was discussed quite a bit, how these programs compare, and the fact that while they are different, they are to a very large extent looking at similar information with very similar objectives in combating IUU fishing.
Thank you. Our next question comes from the Wall Street Journal. Ben, we are queuing up your line, and you are live. Go ahead.
Great. The National Fisheries Institute in the past has said that no new rules on traceability are needed, and that if the government would just enforce the existing laws, they would achieve the same results that they're trying to get with these proposals. You guys obviously see that another way. What do you not see about the existing laws that was lacking that you needed to have a new set of rules here?
Well, quite simply, we do not have laws that allow us to gather the data that would ensure that we can carefully examine the legality of catch and the chain of custody of that product as it makes its way to the U.S.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alaska Public Radio. Liz, you...
Hi, this is Liz Ruskin. So for domestic fishermen, do the fishermen or the fish processors have to keep any new records, or do they have to present their records in a new way, or is this program essentially going to be invisible to them as far as the enforcement of it?
Thank you for your question. NOAA is not developing any additional rulemaking that would establish new reporting requirements or modify existing reporting requirements for domestic fishermen. There is one instance in which there will be additional reporting requirement that some domestic seafood producers would not be addressing at this point, and that is in those instances when domestically harvested seafood is exported for either storage or reprocessing and then re-imported into the U.S. In that instance, this regulation would require that the entire chain of custody of that fish and fish product was included in the information reported and then the records retained. And so that is the one instance in which domestic harvests would be or domestic harvest information would be entered along with an import of seafood product.
Thanks. And as we're gearing up for a second question from Politico, and Catherine, your line is about to go live, I just want to remind you, reporters, just press star 1 if you want to get in line to ask a question. Catherine, go ahead and your line is live.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah, so just kind of building off the last question, I just want to make it, I always want to be clear that this proposed rule obviously applies to imports only, and that's because you already have the data that's required by this, you know, proposed rule from domestic producers. Mm-hmm. And then so this will be for basically the entities that are importing fish into the U.S., correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Great. Our next question is from Greenwire. Emily, go ahead.
Hey, I was wondering, when will this actually go into operation? Like, when will we actually have the traceability program working and, enforced?
So as I mentioned earlier, we are targeting late summer, early fall for publication of a final rule. In the preamble to this proposed regulation, we note that it will clearly take some time for the trade community to come into compliance with this rule. And we are seeking comment from importers and from other stakeholders with respect to what that means. How long will it take for importers to be able to comply with this regulation? And we have proposed a range of 90 days following the publication of the final rule to 12 months following the publication of the final rule. So this is an area where, this is a great example of the value of doing a proposed rule, of being able to get feedback from the affected community, from other stakeholders, and to be able to weigh those comments in determining when the program will actually be up and running.
Thank you, John. And our next question comes from Ben at the Wall Street Journal. And reporters, again, *1 to get in line to ask a question.
Couple of questions here. First one, what numbers are you guys using for the scope of the fraud that you're talking about? Are there actual dollar figures you guys attribute to seafood fraud in the U.S.? That you use, and will this also, the who, what, where, when part of this, will that also require them to talk about use of forced labor or anything regarding trafficked labor that's also been a big issue in seafood?
So with respect to your first question, by nature, it is extremely difficult to quantify the value and the economic impact of IUU fishing and seafood fraud. And there have been a number of peer-reviewed studies over the past years coming up with a variety of estimates. NOAA is very hesitant to associate this program with any specific estimate because it is just, as I said, by nature very difficult to know exactly what that cost is. Certainly there is significant cost at a global scale, but I would not hazard an estimate with respect to IUU product or fraud that would fall within the scope of this rule. With respect to your second question, clearly social issues beyond illegal, unreported, unregulated fishing is getting a lot of attention, and I suspect it will continue to get a lot of attention. The IUU, the task force, was not charged to address that, and in fact, the federal government already has a number of efforts afoot to address labor issues, slavery in the seafood industry as well as other industries. There is no direct association between this effort to combat IUU fishing and seafood fraud with some of those other social issues that are getting public attention.
Thank you, reporters. I just want to remind you, this is your chance to ask questions with the experts on the phone. So just *1 if you want to get in line to ask questions. Our next question comes from Maine Public Radio. Ed, you're live.
Thank you very much. Just to be clear that these rules would have an impact or would address that list of species that you listed specifically earlier, but that there are thoughts that this list would be expanded?
It is the administration's intent to expand this to all species for a number of reasons. The task force and the National Ocean Committee, in response to the task force's recommendation, chose a risk-based approach. This allows us, first of all, to ensure that we are directing our efforts where they are most needed with respect to the list of at-risk species. It gives us as well the ability to ramp up this program, to learn in that process, and to ensure that as the program is expanded, that we're able to do so effectively and efficiently. And so it is the intent of the administration to expand this to all species. I'll reiterate that there will be a report in December of 2016 that addresses timing, challenges, potential pathways around those challenges, and additional considerations with respect to expanding the program. And I would like to just point out that NOAA hosts a website that is actually the work of and represents the entire National Ocean Council Committee on Combating IUU's Fishing and Seafood Fraud, where much of the documentation, much of the many of the public notices that precede the publication of this proposed rule, sort of the backstory to this one, are available. And that is at iuufishing.noaa.gov. That's iuufishing.noaa.gov.
All right, our next question from Politico. Catherine, go ahead.
Hi, thanks. I promise this is my last question. Do you know how many entities you expect this to affect? Like how many importers there are in the U.S. that will have to comply with this?
I'm going to I know that we've looked at this, and I'm going to ask Chris if he has that information available now. If not, we may have to get back to you. Chris?
Yes, thanks, John. This is Chris Rogers, and we have looked at this. We do have a data feed from Customs and Border Protection. We do look at the import statistics. In examining the list of species that would be covered under this rule, we looked at the number of entities that were actually doing the entry filings. They would be customs brokers. That was about 600 individuals for this list of species. And then the actual importers, the importers of records, as they're known in customs, that would be about 2,000 individuals. So they're somewhat different communities. Some importers do their own entry filings, but for the large proportion of imports, they'll hire a customs broker to make those entries. So there will be responsibilities for both entities. As an importer, there's a requirement for getting the information in hand and supplying that to the customs broker. And then for the customs broker, there's the requirement to format the data and get it into the customs system. As John mentioned, that's ITDS, the International Trade Data System. So, again, about 600 entry filers and about 2,000 importers.
Thank you. Chris, our next question is from Ben at the Wall Street Journal again.
Is there an estimated cost to what this will be? Do you guys look at what this would, what companies would have to pay to implement all these things?
So, along with the proposed rule, we have developed what's called a initial regulatory flexibility analysis, which is basically an economic analysis of the impact of the regulation. So that is available, will be available as well. There are, simply by nature, many things that we are challenged to estimate, and in those instances we have specifically requested comment from the trade community to better inform, to clarify the costs that you're asking about.
Okay, there are no other questions in the queue right now. Reporters, if you want to ask a question, this is your chance with the experts. So star one to get in line for a question. I'm going to give you just a few seconds to ponder that. And we are, I just want to remind you all that we're only taking questions. This time is really reserved for the media only. So I see we have a question from the public, but we're not taking those on this call. There will be follow-up ways to get information for members of the public, webinars and information that's on our press release. So going once, going twice, chance to ask questions, star one. All right, and John, do you want to add anything else before we close down?
I just thank everyone for your excellent questions. We look forward at the agency to hearing from the public in response to this proposed rule, and we'll be working throughout the summer to develop a final rule for implementation months later. So thanks again for calling in.
And I think Chris would like to just say one more thing before we close as well.
Yeah, this is Chris Rogers again. Just on that that last question about the cost of compliance, John mentioned we will have a document. It'll be posted tomorrow on the website, iuufishing.gov, as well as the rule itself will be posted on regulations.gov, www.regulations.gov, and that's the portal that we will be accepting comments through. You'll see that document. But with respect to that question on cost, this rule is a record-keeping and reporting rule at its basis, and we're being very flexible in how people can meet those requirements. And we're not prescriptive at all. We do have some minimum data requirements and some model forms that we are issuing that will guide, but they're not required. They'll guide the trade in how to collect the data and make sure it's passed along the supply chain. But given the flexibility on how that can be accomplished, whether their trade is using third-party schemes, regional fishery management organization schemes, proprietary schemes for particular supply chains, or as John mentioned previously, the customary business forms like commercial invoices and bills of lading. So given that flexibility, it was difficult for us to estimate the actual cost because we're not exactly clear on how folks are going to come into compliance. And again, given all the options, our expectation is that the flexibility will help minimize the cost to be borne by industry in meeting these requirements. But you'll see that discussion in the regulatory impact review, initial regulatory flexibility analysis that will be posted tomorrow.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you, John. Thank you, Terry, as well, and thank you to all of you for joining our call today. If you have any other questions, please feel free to contact me directly. Again, my name is Jenny Lyons. My direct phone number is 301-427-8013. If for any reason you have trouble reaching me there, you can try our team's line at 301-427-8003. And my email is Jenny, J-E-N-N-I-E, dot Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, at NOAA, N-O-A-A, dot gov, G-O-V. Thank you for joining us, and have a nice day.
Thank you. That does conclude today's conference. You may disconnect at this time.